They can offload the overload and handcraft a loan that suits your needs. Are you on lender overload? Relief is just minutes away. Call Gold Coast Financial, 831-649-8757. 831-649-8757. Gold Coast Financial.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At the Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to a million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
The CDC reports that antibiotic-resistant MRSA staph infections, usually found in hospitals, are now showing up in gyms, weight rooms, and athletic facilities, apparently transmitted by the sharing of athletic gear and equipment. Honey-Baked Foods are recalling thousands of pounds of ham and turkey after discovering the meat could contain listeria, a bacterium that can cause nausea, headaches, and fever. The ham and turkey sold between September 5th and November 13th, but no illnesses have been reported. Officials say investments in Vietnam rose almost 50% this year, with more than $8 billion pledged as of November 20th. Vietnam, which recently hosted the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit, is set to join the World Trade Organization next month. And every year, a financial services group figures out what it would cost were you to buy everything mentioned in the 12 Days of Christmas song. Assuming you buy each item in the song just once, the price tag this year is $18,920, and that's up 3.1%. from a year ago. Gold is trading at $647 an ounce this hour. Light sweet crude is up 86 cents a barrel, trading at $60.10. Investors unhappy with the news that Walmart sales were down over the Thanksgiving holiday. All the markets are down. The Dow down 156 points at 12,124. NASDAQ is off 51 points. And the S&P 500 is down 18. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I hope everyone had a pleasant Thanksgiving. I certainly did. I went home to Nashville, Tennessee, and saw my family and really had a great time. And now I'm back in Washington, and of course, the Democrats haven't even taken power yet, and already people are lining up to criticize them. I saw a Fox News broadcast just the other day. I guess I should never be surprised by that network. But there they were, and they were taking on the new leaders of the Democratic Party, the chairmen that are going to take over in the House and the Senate, and asking them all kinds of really tough questions. And then came Trent Lott on. You remember Trent Lott. Trent Lott is the former Senate Majority Leader who's going to become the Senate Minority Leader again. From Mississippi, the person who praised Strom Thurmond's presidential campaign, saying that his campaign and America would have been better off if simply Strom Thurmond had won his bid for president in 1948 when he ran as a segregationist. As expected, Trent Lott's racist past was not even raised by Chris Wallace, who at the same time was asking questions of Charlie Rangel about the draft and other things that everyone knows are not going anywhere in Washington. So it was a typical day in Washington. But when I came back, I read a proposal by Al Gore, which helped remind me why he is one of the most innovative leaders in America today. And in fact, this proposal alone has made me decide that if the election were held today in 2008, and I'm the first to say we have a long way to go, and I hate talking about presidential politics now, even though everybody asks me about it, but I'll simply say that if the election were held today in a Democratic primary, I'd endorse Al Gore, simply because he is a man who is really not just a leader, but someone with a lot of foresight, someone who thinks ahead. He's the kind of guy who I really feel like if we had a crisis, he would approach it in an honorable fashion, with his heart in the right place, but also his mind in the right place. He's no woolly leftist who only lets his heart do what he wants. At the same time, he's definitely not one of the corporate-owned people who's beholden to them. He's beholden to no one except the American people, the environment. And he came up with a really great idea, which, frankly, I have to admit, I hadn't really thought about before. And that is to replace the payroll tax with a carbon tax. Did you hear this idea? The idea is that the payroll tax, which is a very regressive tax, you all know what that is. You see it on your paycheck. It's that FICA, F-I-C-A, that goes to Social Security and Medicare. And it's a regressive tax because you only pay it up to a certain level of income, about 80-something thousand dollars, and then you don't pay any more after all. So what that means is that if you make 80,000 or less a year, you pay 7.5% of your income, 15% if you're self-employed. If you're a multimillionaire, you might pay 1% of your income. It's a tax that taxes the poor more heavily than the rich. And it's a tax that, frankly, I felt for a long time the Democrats needed to reduce a bit because it harms the poor at the expense of the rich. Remember, we have an economy now where the rich are getting richer, but everyone else is falling back, the middle class and lower income. So Gore's plan is to replace that with a carbon tax, a tax on our use of fossil fuels, most particularly oil, but also things, anything that pollutes the environment that leads to global warming. And it would be a revenue-neutral tax. We would raise the same amount as we do on the payroll tax. The people who pay it might be different. You might see ExxonMobil paying higher taxes and things like that. And you would probably see higher prices at the gas pump. And I think that I'd be willing to pay higher gasoline taxes knowing that I got it back in payroll tax. Because at the heart of it, if you look at all the problems around the world, all the problems in America, I don't know that it would solve all of them, but I would venture to say the great majority of our problems at home and abroad can be spelled out in three letters. O-I-L. Oil is the greatest danger to our national security, to our economic security, the greatest danger to us at home and abroad. Now, this is nothing new. Jimmy Carter famously said in the 1970s, we need to wean our way off of oil dependence. Ronald Reagan came in and promptly said, oil, oil, oil. He came in with the Texas oil companies, and they've been supporting him ever since. You know that cars for one time got smaller in the 80s. Now they're getting bigger again. Miles per gallon, gasoline standards went down for a while. Now they're back up again. Oil. Oil is the cause of why we're in Iraq. It's the cause of really most of our problems in the Middle East. I thought George Bush made a major admission that really got very little attention. I'm going to play it on my show tonight, but he admitted in his post-election earthquake press conference that we were in Iraq because of oil. Now, this, I thought, again, was a major admission. I mean, I'd been saying for, well, the 3.5 years I've been on the radio, and before then, when I was working in Congress, that indeed the only reason to go to Iraq was oil. And I didn't think that was a good enough reason. I mean, clearly it wasn't weapons of mass destruction. Clearly it wasn't ties to Al-Qaeda. And now the last of the reasons why the administration gave us, democracy, well, that's out the window. Now that we have the Shiite-Sunni civil war that's already all around us in Iraq with our poor troops sitting ducks in the middle. So now Bush says, well, we can't leave because, well, we won't have access to all those sweet oil fields. Okay. You got to give the president credit at least for when his back is up against the wall, admitting the reason we were there all along. Why didn't the press report much of it? In any case, oil is the problem. Oil is what takes these basically tribal conflicts between Shiites and Sunnis that you see in Lebanon, that you see in Iraq, that you see in the growing dangers of Iran and Syria, and makes them our problem. After all, there's tribal wars going on in Africa right now, and well, the administration doesn't care. America doesn't care. Genocide occurs in Sudan, and very few people give a damn. Certainly very few people in power give a damn. Sure, hundreds of thousands of innocent black people are being murdered as we speak, but they don't have any oil. Why should we care? Because of oil, we're in trouble. Because of oil, we continue to be in trouble. Because of oil, we will continue to be in trouble. And that's why I think Al Gore's proposal is the most innovative thing I've heard yet for helping us finally to wean our way off this horrible, addictive drug that's far more dangerous than opium or marijuana or cocaine or crack. It is our crack. Oil is our crack cocaine, and America needs to get off of it. Toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-4-H-E-A-D-O-N, or 888-488-MARK. Want to hear from you. There's been a lot of criticism and controversy over what I said last week on Israel. You want to talk about that, bring it on. Or just the fact that, hey, as our debt rises and rises, the middle class in America is sinking. Anything you want to talk about so we can review, we'll be right back after this.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be ye warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Talking about, well, we're always talking about the Middle East, it seems. For a while, we could let things just sort of go in the Middle East. Iran fought Iraq. Shiites fought Sunni. Almost 1 million people died. It was an awful thing. But heck, we couldn't really stop it, and so we sort of stayed out of it. And two countries that were, you know, virulently anti-American, Iraq and Iran, just kept fighting each other. That is, until Ronald Reagan decided to trade to Iran arms for hostages. Remember that? Back in the 80s? Almost seems like an innocent time. Meanwhile, all across the Middle East, we've got severe problems. In Lebanon, perhaps the most interesting problem is going on. Hezbollah, the Iranian army, really, the Shiite army of Iran, the same local militia group, if you will, terrorist organization is really what it is, that attacked Israel, kidnapped Israeli soldiers, and began a war just a few months ago, is now in a war to take over the government of Lebanon. And it's interesting because Lebanon, of course, is a country of many different religious groups. It's Shiite Muslims and Sunni Muslims and Christians, with no one having a majority. In fact, there's a number of other small religious groups as well. The Shiites don't have a majority either. They may well have a plurality, 40 or 45%. It's hard to tell. There hasn't been a census in Lebanon since its last civil war in the 1970s. But basically, Hezbollah is doing what terrorist organizations do. It's trying to take over the Lebanese government. And the Lebanese government, I think, made a real mistake at the time that Hezbollah attacked Israel 6 months ago. At that time, they could have joined with Israel to fight Hezbollah. The Lebanese army could have worked with the Israeli army to destroy once and for all this threat to Lebanon. Lebanon didn't do it. The government didn't at first. I don't think the government attacked Israel. Hezbollah attacked, but they didn't really condemn Hezbollah, and eventually they started condemning Israel. Well, that was a mistake, because now, having appeased this thorn, the elected Lebanese government is very close to being overthrown by this terrorist group. And where is the world in this? Well, they don't care. Have you heard anyone in the world talk about using the United Nations resolutions to disarm Hezbollah so that Lebanon can truly be a democracy? Nah. If you don't have Israel to blame, there's no one to blame. Unfortunately, the Lebanese are going to see the brunt end of it as Syria is going to take back control. Syria and Iran are very interesting. They really are the new axis of evil. I mean, here you have Iran, a Shiite country, government, religious government. Now, the people of Iran, interestingly enough, I think very much want peace. They're not even Arab. They're Persian. They have a very different culture, and they don't really see the need to do what their government wants to do, which is develop nuclear weapons and wipe out the state of Israel. The people of Iran tend to be very pro-American, and they don't like their theocratic government, but the dictators of Iran are in charge. In Syria as well, you have a Shiite dictatorship controlling over a Sunni majority, and they are all powerful, and they torture, and they're every bit as bad as Saddam Hussein ever was, except they're worse in the sense that, unlike Saddam Hussein, who ever since Kuwait didn't have any foreign adventures, they have gone in, they're assassinating the few moderates left in Lebanon. They just killed another Jemayel. You may remember that back in the 80s, Jemayel, which is a Christian family that had a lot of power in Lebanon, were assassinated. The Syrians assassinated them again. And the government is saying, hey, we need to investigate. We need to prove that Syria is behind this. And Hezbollah and Syria and Iran are saying, tough, Lebanon, you don't get to control your government. We do. After all, the Syrian people and the Iranian people don't get to control their government at all. So here's my proposal. Since you have Syria and Iran and Lebanon, all countries with a majority of the population are not theocratic Shiites, all with a majority of the population don't want to be ruled by these dictators, and yet they're, you know, taken over nonetheless. Lebanon hasn't happened yet, but you just wait. Civil war's around the corner. My proposal is that we join with the Sunni majorities, at least in Syria and Lebanon. It'd be Sunnis and Christians, and Iran it would be basically the secular population, in opposing these Shiite rulers. No, I'm not talking about sending U.S. troops. Don't let anyone think I'm saying that. Heck, we couldn't send troops if we wanted to. They're all bogged down in Iraq. But the sad thing is that we took out Saddam Hussein from power. He was actually a counterweight to these forces, to these radical Shiite dangerous forces that want to commit genocide in the region. And now that they're gone, we need those counterweights. So I think we go back and work with countries like Jordan. Heck, even Saudi Arabia. I'm not a big fan of Saudi Arabia, but The sad thing is that because we've messed up Iraq so much, we need to have that kind of counterweight in the region. So I think we need to pull our troops out, but that doesn't mean we should stop playing a role. I think we've got to work towards promoting democracy. Now, this sounds, I know, like a lot of the rhetoric of the Bush administration, and I think it does because the idea of promoting democracy isn't a bad idea. Promoting democracy in the Middle East is not a bad idea. It's a good idea. The question is not whether it's a good goal, but how do you do it? Can you do it through the point of a gun? I think that the war in Iraq, the civil war in Iraq, has proven that it just can't be done that way. You can't force a country to have a democracy, at least not without the kind of troops and strength from the American people and really kind of viciously wiping out that we did in Japan and Germany. I mean, I think if we hadn't nuked Japan and dropped firebombs in Dresden and occupied Japan and Germany for decades, I don't know they would have turned out to be the democracies that they are. And I don't think we can do that in Iraq. So what do we do? Well, partly what we do is remind ourselves why we're there in the first place, why this region even matters to us. We're certainly not going into Liberia or Haiti or the Sudan or any of the countries around the world where vicious human rights violations are occurring to save democracy. I mean, I think we should. I think that we could do a lot of good, particularly in Darfur, with not that many troops. We're not there because they don't have oil. That's why we care. And that's why Iran is so powerful. Why is Syria so powerful? Well, they get their money from Iran. What is Iran? I mean, it's a big country. But, I don't know that it's that much bigger than Nigeria. Maybe I have to look on the map to see. Or Sudan, for that matter. The difference is that Iran has oil. And all the world depends on it. Iraq has oil. Saudi Arabia has oil. Otherwise, what's Saudi Arabia? Saudi Arabia is an empty desert. It was an empty desert. Now it has tremendous wealth because of oil. But basically, the Saudis were a tribe in the desert, a tribe of Bedouins, wandered throughout the desert, very much in the pre-modern times. And until oil was found in Arabia, the Saud family was, a family that simply took over the country from the British in the 1920s. It's all about oil. And that's why I really am growing to love Al Gore's proposal. And I haven't studied it in detail. Frankly, it's just come out. But it's not just the United States. I mean, Sweden has done this. Netherlands have done this. A number of European countries have done this. New Zealand has done it. And think about who would be taxed. Yes, you would find higher gas prices. That's the negative. Let's be honest about it. But you'd also have the same oil companies that made massive profits, the largest profits of any corporation at any time in American history, were made by ExxonMobil in 2006. And they did it while getting taxpayer subsidies. Instead of subsidizing the oil companies, let's tax them. Let's tax them heavily. And if it eats into their profits, oh well. Sell your oil stocks now. I'm not really concerned about the oil shareholders. I'm concerned about the American people. And when you think about the regressive payroll tax and substituting that for a tax that really does, and that's what economics is supposed to do. It would encourage people not to use oil. Now, I'm not saying not to use cars. I said not to use oil. Remember in California, heck, it seems like just yesterday, but it's already 10 years ago, developed electric cars and insisted that the big car manufacturers devote 1 or 2% of their fleet to electric cars in the state of California, and no other state followed suit. I mean, all you really need is these little electric pumps all around. I mean, we have gasoline stations all across the country. How much harder is it to put electric stations around the country? Or to do what Brazil did, 40% of their fleet running on sugarcane. Soybeans, apparently, I have gone into a car run entirely by soybeans. It's not that hard to do, folks. You don't have to give up your cars. You don't even have to give up your big SUVs, although I know America loves them. You may have to pay a bit more for them. We can get off oil. And who other than Al Gore is really proposing these far-reaching ideas to radically restructure the way we pay taxes and to actually do something? I mean, think about what this would do. It not only helps us get out of the Middle East. Remember, right now we are funding both sides. We are funding our troops, and we're funding the people attacking our troops. We are funding our allies, and we are funding our enemies. If the Middle Eastern oil doesn't matter any, we don't need to be there. So we save. I mean, look, we've spent $500 billion in Iraq. You know how much money that is? $500 billion? There are only 300 million Americans, right? So that's $2,000 for every man, woman, and child. Actually a lot more depending on your income, but you know, I don't know, could you use, if you have a family of four, $8,000? Well, it's gone, plus interest. It's going to be $10,000-$12,000. You lost it. And what do we achieve? Nothing. Did you enjoy your spending of your $12,000? Because it's going to be more, folks. Maybe another $12,000. Oh, not to mention 3,000 American lives lost, 20,000 wounded, people who've lost their limbs, they're never going to get it back. Not to mention causing the entire world that was supporting us after September 11th to hate us. And you know what? We didn't even get oil that cheaply. So think what this oil tax would do. Gets us out of the Middle East. We could still play a role there, but we don't need to be there. Global warming, a huge threat to the environment, a huge worldwide threat. If we have a carbon tax, it reduces carbon use. Would play a major role. I mean, that's obviously one of the main reasons that Al Gore supports it. A major role in fighting global warming. And here's one of the beauties of it. It also takes a tax that's regressive, that hurts the poor more than the rich, and spreads it more evenly. Sure, people who have to buy gasoline, they're going to pay more at the pump. But so is Exxon, so is Mobil, so are all the big companies that use oil. It's really an amazing idea. And it shows why, as I said, Al Gore is still one of the greatest thinkers in America today. When he came out early against the Iraq War, before the 2004 presidential campaign, endorsed Howard Dean, the Republicans called him crazy. Crazy! They said that he was as much a crazy screamer as Dean. They said he was wild and out of control. Did you ever notice that those same language was used against the biblical prophets, that sometimes those who prophesy the truth are the ones most deemed out of control? So kudos to Al Gore and to his proposal, and I hope that Congress does take it seriously. This is a serious man. He just happens to be thinking ahead of us a long way. Toll-free number, 888-488-MARK, 877-4-HEAD-ON. Call either one. Let me know what you think about this or any other proposal of the week. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Head On Radio with Bob Kincaid.
when? Somebody tell me when the United States of America went from a can-do country to a can't-do country. Was can-do washed away in the fetid floods of Katrina? Was can-do killed in the stinking sands of Iraq? Did can-do get buried in the dank and gassy hole of Sago number one? Where did the Bush administration go when they took can-do out and killed it? What happened to a nation that never said we can't? What happened to that nation that knew that the only thing it had to fear was fear itself?
Well, Mr. Kincaid, we've replaced that slogan. Now all we have is fear.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on the Head On Radio Network. Do you know
what you want? Listen, man, adding fractions is no big deal.
Nah?
No. You just got to find what they call the common denominator. Let me show you.
All right.
Now, see these bottom numbers?
Yeah.
These are the denominators. That one's a 4 and that one's an 8.
Mm-hmm.
You just double both of these numbers so that becomes an 8 too. Then you add them up.
Man, you sure make this easy.
Charles Bennett always dreamed that after college he'd return to the old neighborhood as a teacher. But without the money for tuition, only half of his dream came true. He's back in the old neighborhood.
Well, enough math. I gotta deliver these sandwiches.
Oh, sure.
Please support the United Negro College Fund. Call 1-800-332-UNCF. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. A public service brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. If you've been following the news, you know that last week the Iraq War officially has lasted longer than World War II, making it one of the longer wars in our history. Soon it will bypass the Civil War, and then I guess the Revolutionary War, leaving only the war in Vietnam as our longest war. And what's interesting is how much difference an election makes. Before the election, you recall the Republicans gleefully said the Democratic policy was cut and run. Cut and run. We were never going to leave Iraq until we had victory. And if you wanted to get out of Iraq to save American lives or dollars, why, you were just a coward. You're a coward. Cut and run. You hated America. In fact, if you're against the war, and if you criticize the president, well, let's just listen to the president himself. He says that if the Democrats win, the terrorists win and America loses. If you advocated a change in Iraqi policy, you were a terrorist. You were helping the terrorists and America was losing. That was rhetoric a month ago, 30 days ago. When the moon was in the same phase, Republicans were saying exactly that. What a difference an election makes. Now, with the Iraq Study Group, the administration is trying to save face and hopefully get us out of Iraq. We'll see. But Iraq has lasted longer than World War II. It's kind of hard to know what we've achieved. Every day, you see it in the news, the violence grows more and more and more. And those few that used to claim we were making progress are now full of egg on their face. Shiites are killing Sunnis. Sunnis are killing Shiites. The militias are taking over the role of the government. The government's doing virtually nothing except corruptly taking the billions of dollars given by the world and pocketing it. And I just read today's newspaper that Shiite militia, when attacked by the Sunni militia, is bringing people to hospitals and things like that. You know, Mao Zedong, you know who he is? He was the communist leader of China for many years. He was the revolutionary who, with a very, very small group in the 1920s, overturned Chiang Kai-shek and the Chinese dictators at that time to put in his own communist dictatorship. Mao Zedong, I thought, said an amazing thing about how you win a guerrilla war that people really aren't following. He said this in the 1920s, folks. A guerrilla war, unlike a conventional war, is not won through force of arms. Doesn't matter how many battles you win, unless you actually wipe out the population, as the North did to the South in the Civil War, or as we did, frankly, in World War II, where we basically killed every male German that could fight, just about, and we dropped an atomic bomb in Japan. Unless you do that kind of absolute wipeout, a guerrilla war is won, not through territory, not through force of arms, but through politics. A guerrilla war, Mao wrote, is won when the people support you, no matter really who's in control of force of arms. And if you ever wonder why we lost the war in Iraq, just listen to that old guerrilla specialist, Mao Zedong. We lost the war because we lost the confidence of the Iraqi people. Heck, we may have never had it to begin with. It's the reason why we could have won in Iraq. I still believe if we'd done something that I advocated back in 1992, when our troops stopped short of taking out Saddam Hussein's Red Guards, going on to Baghdad. What we needed to do was to support the Shiites and the Kurds that were themselves revolting. Needed to support them, maybe some air support. If we had American troops there, which we did, get them in and get them out. Help them take over their own country, make them in charge of their own country. The Iraqi government today is a lot like, I think, the South Vietnamese government was in Vietnam. They're our puppets. You know, they were democratically elected, but the people don't know in a new democracy who to vote for, and most of them are simply corruptly taking all the money and doing whatever America wants. If we threaten to leave, we may do more good than we've ever done in Iraq. Because by threatening to leave, we tell the Iraqi government, you're on borrowed time. You're not going to continue to get billions of dollars in U.S. money, U.S. armed support. You're on borrowed time. Either make your country work or we're gone. Either way, we get out. Hopefully it works. But if it doesn't, let no one be blamed. Let no one be blamed if we leave Iraq in the next 2 years and Iraq descends into civil war. Because, my friends, Iraq is already in civil war. It will be in civil war whether we're there or not. And the irony of seeing George Bush in Vietnam for the first time, remember he skipped out the last time he was wanted by his country to fight. He was too busy getting drunk and having fist fights with his father and a cocaine habit, not to mention the drunk driving arrest. But anyway, he was too busy to go to Iraq last time, to Vietnam the last time. And yet he and Republicans across the nation say, aha, it is liberals who caused us defeat in Vietnam. We were wrong to leave. We should have stayed. We should have stayed in Vietnam. If Republicans, like George Bush, had his way, well, he wouldn't be fighting there because, you know, I mean, we can't have our rich elites actually dying for America. But poor people of America would be fighting in Vietnam. They'd be there for the last 30 years. Yeah, we probably have lost another 50,000 to 100,000 more lives. Yes, we probably would have spent $2, $3 trillion. But Vietnam would have been the same mess that Iraq is today. That's the victory that they wanted in Vietnam. What did our defeat do? Our defeat, where we embarrassingly had to pull our troops out from helicopter from the embassy of Saigon at the last minute. Well, Bush went to Vietnam, far from a perfect country. But it's a lot better off than it was 30 years ago. I don't support communist dictatorships, but Vietnam could have done a lot worse. A lot worse. And the fact that even George Bush is there and talking about trade negotiations, did it make anyone else's head spin? We cut and run in Vietnam, and Vietnam is pretty much a success story. It ain't perfect. It ain't perfect. But it's far better off than most countries in Southeast Asia and Africa. Heck, the Middle East for that matter. Maybe cutting and running was the best thing we ever did in Vietnam. Meanwhile, of course, Israel has done an amazing thing. It has agreed to a ceasefire with Hamas in Gaza. It's a good first step. We'll see how it goes. Still think that Hamas needs to release the Israeli soldier that they kidnapped. And I think that the people of Gaza need to understand who are their friends, who are their enemies. Hamas is no friend to the people of Gaza, just as Hezbollah is no friend to the people of Lebanon, just as the Iranian government and the Syrian government are no friends to their people. Yes, they do provide some social services, but in return, they take your children and use them as suicide bombers. And that is not the kind of moral calculus that any parent should give. Oh, great. You'll bury my son for free, but I have to give him up to kill himself while trying to kill Israeli children, and then you give him a free burial? No deal. No deal. We'll see what happens with this ceasefire, but I don't think the world should let up on Hamas just because of the ceasefire. They need to recognize the right of Israel to exist. They need to stop doing attacks across the border. They need to sit down at the negotiating table. Remember, the Israeli government under Olmert was ready to leave not just Gaza, they left Gaza, but to leave the West Bank as well, large portions of it, for free, for nothing, simply withdraw. The Palestinians said, no, don't withdraw. Don't occupy the West Bank and Gaza, and don't withdraw from the West Bank and Gaza. Whatever you do, it's wrong. We're going to kill your children. Well, with that kind of policy, it's no wonder Israel retreated to a defensive position and said, you know, forget it. You attack us, we attack you back. Let no one think that liberals are afraid to use force. I'm not afraid to use force. The question is not whether America should ever use force. I'm not a pacifist. But whether there should be a wise use of force. Afghanistan, self-defense, wise use of force. If we have to take out Iran's nuclear weapons, or North Korea's for that matter, I've supported that too. And some of you folks on the left may disagree with me. That's fine, call in. To me, it's not about the use of force, but the wise use of force, and recognizing when a policy is failing, as a policy is failing in Iraq. And recognizing above all, as I stated at the beginning of the broadcast, that if it weren't for oil, O-I-L, we wouldn't be caring about these countries to begin with. Not very much. Toll free, 888-488-MARK. I want to hear from you, 888-488-6275. Or you can dial 877-4-HEAD-ON. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hi, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, forward it to phishing@irs.gov. That's phishing at irs.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484. Thank you.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Have you noticed what happened to the Coalition of the Willing? Never a very large coalition. Unlike in Afghanistan, where all of NATO was ready to help America fight a war of self-defense, Iraq was always a piddling army of, Fiji sending us their cook and Costa Rica sending us moral support until they withdrew that moral support. Well, about the only country that provided any significant forces was Great Britain, with Poland and Italy providing a few troops. Well, Italy will be out in a week. Poland will be out in a few weeks. And even Great Britain, the last country, the only country that provided significant support, they're pulling out by the end of 2007, most of their troops. We're there alone. We're all there alone, and our troops don't even know what they're doing. No, Britain, Italy, they're going to go back and they're going to focus on domestic needs. And meanwhile, we're going to try to new ways to fight terrorists. Torture. That's what we're going to do. That's the solution. Not political, solving the problems of Iraq, not solving the problems at home. What we need is more torture, the Bush administration says. Oh, they say they don't want torture. But recently they took a standard in American courts that is really amazing me. When people who have been tortured, either by Americans or sometimes, we outsource torture, right? We send people to Syria and Egypt and so forth to be tortured. Well, one inmate in Guantanamo Bay, Majid Khan, wants to sue to challenge the torture used against him, but he's got a problem. He can't mention how he was tortured. That's apparently top secret information. I want you to think about this. Top secret information. Apparently, we are giving someone who the Bush administration claims to be an Al-Qaeda terrorist top secret classified information. Now, wait a minute. Isn't giving top secret classified information to our enemies treason? Maybe, but according to George Bush, if you torture somebody, then suddenly they have the top secret information of how you tortured them. Wow. Even Franz Kafka didn't go that far. That's right, I mistreat you so bad that you can't challenge your mistreatment, because to do so would say how I mistreated you. Boy, for those of us who were wondering about Clinton-esque uses of language, nothing beats that for torture. In Italy, they have an indictment for 25 American CIA agents who kidnapped a man out of Italy and sent him to be tortured. Now, if we had a government that cared about human rights, that cared about war crimes, that cared about torture, we would submit our CIA members to the Italian court and say, go ahead, give them a trial. Give them a trial. They did no wrong. And if they did do wrong, they deserve to be punished. Now, that'll never happen, but it's just kind of fun to imagine America as a country that cares about human rights, that cares about torture. No, Britain and Italy are focused on their domestic needs. Would that we do the same? If you haven't read it yet, I want to recommend to everyone to read a really terrific short op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal by the senator-elect of Virginia, the man who made the difference in Democratic control of the Senate, Jim Webb. I posted it on my website under the comments of November 26th. Take a look at Jim Webb. This is an ex-Republican, Secretary of the Navy under Ronald Reagan, no liberal he, talking about class struggle in the United States. No, he's not a communist. As I said, he's an ex-Republican, but he recognizes what very few Republicans are willing to admit. We are coming to become like Mexico, like Latin America, a country where the rich are getting infinitely richer and the middle class are struggling to keep up. And when you discuss this issue with Republicans, their inevitable answer is, oh well, enough welfare to the poor. I was talking just last night with some people, Republicans, who were saying, I was talking about the need for education, saying in effect that an 8-year-old who's black and from the ghetto should get a decent education so they have a chance to succeed in America, that they're often growing up illiterate. And their response was, no more welfare. And I said, education is not welfare. It is our future. And they talked about, well, you know, the kids' parents shouldn't have had them. I want you to think about that next time you hear a pro-life Republican talk about, we need less abortions. We need 1.5 million more poor black children in the underclass so that we can not educate them, not feed them, not house them, and put them in prison. Totally apart from the cruelty to those young children, think about the cost to our society. No, truly the Republican Party is a party that cares about poor blacks from the moment they're conceived to the moment they're born. When I talked about education or I talked about housing, again, these Republicans brought up welfare. Well, my friends, I supported welfare reform in 1996. Some liberals didn't. But I understand why a kid needs an education in America and why that, to me, is not welfare. It seems to me that Americans who have money, some of them and not all, certainly not John Kerry or Ted Kennedy, and they've got plenty of money, but many Americans feel like once they get money, they pull the ladder up after them. The ladder of economic opportunity, the ladder of the American dream, they climbed it. They're proud of themselves, and they should be. But now they're not going to give a helping hand to anyone else. The rest can just drown. And when you hear people like that, I would just remind them that we're all born helpless babies. We die helpless as well. And in the meantime, we are helped by the adults who work hard, both for their children and their parents. And so when we are in that realm of adulthood, when we can help others, we have an obligation. I don't care whether that obligation is religious or patriotic or human. Call it whatever you want. But to not have that obligation is simply selfish. Others helped you. And if you're not going to help anyone else, well, then you're just a Republican, I guess. A Republican. We have CEOs in America making 400 times as much as their workers, sometimes more. This is, in fact, the average. The average CEO makes 400 times as much. Many make 1,000 times as much. In the 1960s, the average CEO made 20 times what the average worker made. It was all pointed out in Jim Webb's article. The minimum wage hasn't been raised in a decade. I raised this question of the minimum wage to my Republican friends, and they again talked about welfare. Well, guess what? The minimum wage is not welfare either. It's not. People are working hard to get their minimum wage, sometimes 40 hours a week, sometimes 60 hours a week. And for all the people that complain about, oh, no, people, poor people are doing nothing and buying cell phones. They might need those cell phones. Buying cell phones and having cable TV. Poor people that want to work get the minimum wage. And if the minimum wage doesn't provide them any standard of living out of poverty, and folks, even if we raise it to $7.25 an hour, it doesn't get you out of poverty. Gives them an incentive not to work. We have to face the facts in America, not just because we should care about poor and middle class and today even the lower upper middle income people, but because they are the engines of the economy. Trickle-down economics has never worked. And as we remove our addiction to foreign oil and we change the payroll tax, we need to recognize this. Tune in tonight for the Inside Scoop. I'm going to be debating such a Republican, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You can hear it again at Tuesday, tomorrow at 2 o'clock. For now, this is Mark Levine signing off.
Over with.
So this is good.
When we got progress. Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well now, good afternoon, everybody, here on this November 22nd, day before Thanksgiving, 2006. Glad to have all of you along with us today. We're coming to you from the very chilly Cool Waters and Blue Waters in St. Cool Blue Waters in Sandy Beaches of Fort Myers, Southwest Florida. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Going to try and have an interesting show for you today. Right off, I guess I don't have to tell everybody what this date is a reminder of. Where were you, those of you that are old enough to answer the question, where were you 43 years old today? What were you doing? I remember exactly where I was and what I was doing, and I'm sure all of you do, too, that have a remembrance of that day. Probably one of the most difficult days in American history. It certainly was for me in my life, and I'm sure it was for many of you. Very, very, very traumatic day, and we'll do a little something to pay homage to the late, great JFK today. Not a lot, but don't want to overdo it. There's a lot on TV about it and so forth. Hard to believe that 43 years have gone by. Incredible. Just incredible how fast time flies. And as you get older, it becomes that speeding train heading down the mountainside with no brakes, if you know what I mean. Just going along so fast. Hate to see it go that fast, but such is life. So glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Got several things we want to talk about. Let me tell you one thing I was going to talk about, and that's been canceled. Oh, my God. I received an email from Grover Norquist's office, and I'm sure most of you know who Grover Norquist is. I forget the exact name of that tax organization that he's at, you know, Americans for Tax Reform or whatever it is he calls it. Just some scam for him to make a lot of money. If any of you think that Grover Norquist gives a damn about how much tax you and I pay, why you can you're pretty doggone gullible if you think that he really cares about anybody's taxes. He is an expert on tax matters, but he's wrong because he wants to tilt it toward the rich, which he has succeeded in doing. But anyway, we received an email from his office, and I guess they sent it out like these media blasts to try and get on all the shows, you know, and ask if we'd have him on for an interview. And I wrote back and said, "Why, of course, we'll do a show on taxes if we can have Grover on." And they wrote back and said, "Okay, when would you like to have him on?" And I told him, "Well, I'd like to have him on today." And they checked the schedule and came back and said, "Yes, he's available today." And the next part is my fault. I shouldn't have done this, but I don't like to ambush anybody. So I simply wrote back and said, "You do know that I'm a liberal Democrat, and you do know that I will vigorously debate Mr. Norquist on his tax, his stance on taxes for everybody." And my goodness, don't you know, I got another email back that said, "Well, we declined to be on. We found out that Mr. Norquist is busy after all." So he only likes to go, like the vice president on Limbaugh's show, they only like to go where they'll be welcomed with open arms. Have you noticed that? Same is true with the liberals, most of them anyway. You see Lieberman and Charlie Rangel, good friends of Sean Hannity. I will never understand that. Lieberman, I can understand. I don't understand Charlie Rangel doing that. I really don't. I guess FaceTime's important. It must be important for him to go on those programs. If he thinks he's going to get anything through to those listeners, he's badly mistaken. But we've got much to talk about today. Hey, did you see that in the news where one of the Bush girls, Babs Jr., I guess whatever they call her, Barbara Bush, the girl, she got robbed down in Buenos Aires? Yes, she got robbed even though she was being guarded by a detail of Secret Service agents.